Welcome to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Division meeting. Pursuant to House File 10.01, I call this remote meeting to order. The CLA will take the roll. When your name is called, please say present.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland. Representative Meckland. Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandsted.
Present.
And Representative Thompson.
Thompson present.
Representative Bernardi, I believe you did.
Oh, thank you.
Chair Thompson present.
Yes, Ms. Moss, you got Representative Thompson, correct?
I did, yes.
And we do have a quorum, is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay, and we do have a quorum. I would like to, would someone like to make a motion to approve the minutes for January 26, 2020?
So moved.
Representative Albright moves approval of the minutes for January 26th, 2021. Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Kosnick.
I think I missed the roll call. If you could note me as present with my St. Cloud State sweater on.
We should coordinate that next year. Way to go. Too bad we don't have a break. I'd put my one of my Minnesota State, many of them on. I'll choose one of them. Okay, thank you for saying that you're present. So we are in the middle of a motion, and I apologize for that. Representative Albright moves approval of the minutes for January 26, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion carries. The minutes for January 26, 2021 are approved. Today we have a presentation from Minnesota State who will be giving us an overview of their legislative agenda and priorities this year. We have several presenters today, starting with Jay Coles. Chair Coles, welcome to our committee. Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chancellor, Vice Chair, I should say, Christensen, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jay Coles, Chair of the Minnesota State Board of Trustees. With me today is Trustee Roger Moe, Vice Chair of the Board of Trustees and Chair of the Board's Finance Committee, Devinder Malhotra, the Chancellor of Minnesota State, and Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities. And we're also fortunate today to have with us the four presidents who make up the system's Leadership Council Executive Committee. Hera Charlier, President of Central Lakes College, Adenuga Atwalagan, President of Riverland Community College, Robin Wacker, President of St. Cloud State University, and Scott Olson, President of Winona State University. Chair Bernardi, Minnesota is excited to be this committee's partner in this important work. Before I begin, I'd like to provide you with a brief outline of our presentation today. Vice Chair Roger Moe and I will provide an overview on the system's governance and organization. Chancellor Malhotra will speak to the vision of Minnesota State and address the system's strategic direction. And Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey will provide you with the details of our biennial budget request. Vice Chancellor Mackey will then introduce President Charlier, who will speak about student affordability, in particular about the successful Z-degree textbook program at Central Lakes College. President Ottawaligan will share with you Minnesota State's commitment to technical education and community workforce needs. President Wacker will provide an update on how the colleges and universities are addressing the pandemic, and President Olson will provide an update on where the system is at with Next Gen, an important initiative many of you are familiar with. Madam Chair, our system of 54 campuses is governed by a 15-member Board of Trustees appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. 8 trustees are from each congressional district. There are also 4 at-large seats, as well as 3 student trustees. We are all volunteers who are absolutely committed to the success of Minnesota State, our students, and the communities we serve. The Board of Trustees has policy responsibility for system planning, academic programs, fiscal management, personnel, admissions requirements, tuition and fees, and rules and regulations. And each and every board member remains true to the core values of Minnesota State when managing these responsibilities. Because of the partnership and support from the legislature and governor, our campuses make an $8 billion economic impact in your communities each year, in part through the 36,500 alumni that we graduate each year. And Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Vice Chair Moe.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Vice Chair Moe. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the House Higher Education Committee. For the record, I'm Roger Moe, Vice Chair of Minnesota State Board of Trustees. Go through my prepared comments, let me extend my congratulations to all of you, those of you that were re-elected to office. I know that you're looking forward to an exciting session, and to those of you that are new to the legislature, you are about to go to the best college there is. It's a great learning experience, and you get exposed to an awful lot of information. I had the good fortune to serve in the legislature for 32 years and spent a lot of time on higher education. As a matter of fact, the irony of me being on this board is that in the early 90s, I had the legislation that took the 3 higher ed systems and created a single governing board, which is now Minnesota State. To give you an idea of the size and scope of Minnesota State's system, if you took the higher education systems in this country that have both 2 and 4 year institutions, we are the 4th largest in the country. Our colleges and universities educate 250,000 students each year across the state. Of those 333,000, more than 65,000 are students of color and indigenous students. More than 70,000 are over the age of 25. 68,500 are low-income students. More than 42,000 are the first in their family to attend college. Close to 9,000 veterans and service members, and 100,000 are employees of businesses and industries through our customized training and continuing education programs. Our 30 colleges and 7 universities serve as catalysts for social and economic vibrancy. Minnesota State is the most powerful and effective resource that the state has to ensure opportunity and prosperity for its citizens and communities. Our colleges and universities serve students no matter where they are on the educational journey, from a certificate all the way to an applied doctoral program, high school student or recent grad, students returning to complete a degree or start another, and adults already in the workforce who need or want additional education or training. We offer more than 4,000 academic programs, and students take many of those online. We form partnerships with employers across the state to ensure graduates entering the workforce are ready to contribute the first day on the job. And we produce more graduates for jobs in critical, high-demand fields such as healthcare and information technology than anyone else in the state. This slide represents the impact of our colleges and universities in terms of workforce development. You can see here the profound impact Minnesota has on Minnesota's workforce. Of our 36,500 graduates each year, 87% of those graduates find jobs in their fields of study within 1 year. I want to be very clear that we share your passion for career and technical education. Each year, more than 20,000 students graduate from our two-year career and technical programs. Minnesota State is the economic imperative for the state of Minnesota, and we will be an important force in Minnesota's post-pandemic economy. I've said this before, and I'll say it again here today. Minnesota State College and University System is the best state economic development program we have. Like you, we have heard a clear message from employers and community leaders from across Minnesota that they need more graduates with the skill set to move our economy forward. We understand the importance of this issue, and the chancellor and campus leaders are focused on this work. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair. And with your permission, I'd like to turn this presentation over to Chancellor Malhotra.
Thank you. Welcome, Chancellor Malhotra. It's nice to see you today. You may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Christensen. For the record, I have the privilege and honor to be the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and my name is Devinder Malhotra. Chair Bernardi, congratulations on being named Chair of this committee again. I look forward to the work that is ahead with you and all other members of the committee. Representative O'Neill, we are delighted to have an opportunity to work with you and partner with you as the minority lead on this committee. I welcome the opportunity to work with all the returning members of the committee, and I'm looking forward to getting to know the new committee members. Thank you, Chair Coles and Vice Chair Moe, for joining us today, but more importantly, thank you to both of you and indeed the entire Minnesota State Board of Trustees for your service to Minnesota State and to the state of Minnesota. And I would be remiss if I didn't express my deep appreciation to our college and university presidents and all our dedicated faculty and staff for their commitment in serving over 333,000 students across Minnesota. Madam Chair, we spend a great deal of time making sure that we are thinking about strategic issues in this fast-paced and fast-changing environment in which our students will have to compete in ways we can only imagine. At Minnesota State, we remain steadfast in our commitment to make good on our vision of providing opportunity for all Minnesotans. Madam Chair, our mission is simple. We ensure access to affordable and exceptional post-secondary education to all Minnesotans so they can become the talent Minnesota and its economy needs. To achieve our mission, every one of us is focused on our core commitments, ensuring access to an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans, be the partner of choice to meet Minnesota's workforce and community needs, and to deliver the highest value, most affordable higher education option. Madam Chair, members of the committee, these are our students, the people we serve. I am in awe of each and every one of our students for their persistence and perseverance in staying focused on their goals. In many cases, they must overcome significant barriers to continue their educational journey and reach their dreams. I would like to say a few words about our system leadership and how the system office interacts with the colleges and universities. As chancellor, I work closely with our presidents, ensuring that we all together are meeting the commitments we have made to the Minnesotans, all Minnesotans, and to the state of Minnesota. On this slide, you can see our state university leaders, and the following two slides, you will see our college leaders. In the system office, we focus on work that will increase the effectiveness and the impact of the work being undertaken by all our colleges and universities. Further, in the system office, we manage services for more cost efficiency across the campuses. Some of the examples of these services include information technology, legal services, and financial oversight. Along with meeting with our student groups and bargaining units that happens on campus each and every day, I personally meet with our statewide student organizations and our collective bargaining unit leaders to work on pressing issues throughout the year. While our colleges and universities, under the leadership of our presidents, are doing great work, we understand we need to do more. When I became chancellor, I embarked on an aggressive listening tour, driving across the state to your communities, to listen to what legislators, business leaders, community leaders, members of the K-12 sectors, and nonprofits had to say about the partnerships our system and our campuses have forged. They shared with me what our campuses mean to them and what they need Minnesota State to provide. They also told me that they stand ready to partner with us and want to deepen and enhance these relationships. It's very clear that the relationship with our communities and campuses is integral to the success of Minnesota State. In June 2019, we developed a shared vision and set a critical goal that by 2030, Minnesota State will eliminate the educational equity gaps at every Minnesota State college and university. Equity 2030 will require both intentional systems and support structures and culture change and innovation. Advocacy and leadership, engagement with partners and stakeholders across the state, including legislative support, will be needed to accomplish this goal. Madam Chair, our students come to us with incredible challenges. In the current pandemic, more and more of our students are struggling with keeping part-time jobs as well as with childcare needs and mental health needs. Minnesota State has 68,500 students from low-income families, as well as 65,000 students of color and those of indigenous origins. These students are economically vulnerable and are dropping out in larger numbers as their ability to pursue their education is severely impaired because of falling incomes and unemployment. It is critical that we find ways to enable these students to continue their educational journey. Embedded in our legislative request are the resources we need to make strategic investments to support our students and to ensure the financial viability of our colleges and universities. Madam Chair, I would now like to turn to Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey to talk about the details of biennial budget request that addresses the pressing needs of our students I just talked about. Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the committee. Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Thank you, Chancellor Malhotra. I would like to welcome our Vice Chancellor Mackey to the committee. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chancellor Christensen, members of the committee. For the record, I am Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities. As you heard from Chancellor Malhotra, Minnesota State ensures access to affordable and exceptional post-secondary education to all Minnesotans so they can become the talent Minnesota needs. This budget request's two main priorities align strongly with this mission, as well as providing direct support to our students and the campuses that support our students. Chancellor Malhotra mentioned conversations with the leadership teams across the state, the bargaining units, and the statewide student associations, and this budget request was constructed in a manner that took input and guidance from all of our stakeholders to collectively arrive at these two priorities that we're sharing with you this afternoon. And our two main priorities, campus responsiveness and stabilization, and equity and affordability, a very straightforward request that focuses on what's most important at this point in time to Minnesota State. I will spend the next few minutes providing more information on how additional state investments would support our colleges and universities' critical needs. Campus responsiveness and stabilization. As the Chancellor mentioned, Minnesota State prides itself on partnering with employers to educate and train their workforce. Minnesota State's role in our colleges and universities in helping the state's economic recovery is based on having an adequate amount of programs and services across the state to meet the needs of our students and the communities they serve. You heard from Chair Coles of the 54 campuses we have across the state and the access that we provide, and additional investments in those campuses is critical to provide the ongoing revenue in order for those campuses to have a sufficient number of programs and services to serve those students and those communities. The $75 million in this request is funding that would go directly to each one of those 54 campuses. We know that our colleges and universities need sufficient ongoing revenue while at the same time keeping the cost down for our students to support the ongoing costs in order to run our institutions. Our next priority of equity and affordability, Chancellor Malhotra stressed how helping address racial and economic disparities is a priority of our system. We've learned a lot recently, and even more so, about the basic needs of Minnesota State students. A recent Real College survey showed that 37% of our students surveyed experience food insecurity, 48% experienced housing insecurity, 18% experienced homelessness. students of color and Native origin are more likely to have experienced insecurities than white students. Mental health needs continue to grow and are identified as the number one health issue on our campuses. The number of student parents are increasing, while the availability of on-campus childcare is decreasing. And financial emergencies continue, and even more so in the midst of a pandemic, threaten student persistence towards their goals on all of our campuses. Minnesota State is responding by establishing infrastructure to support these needs, continuing to work to put together a funding plan that maximizes the impact with this request. Creating additional support services and expanding current ones to help with mental health services, expanding the availability of emergency funds, expanding partnerships with state and community partners. We need to support our colleges and universities so they have the programs that are demanded both academically and both from addressing student basic needs so they can provide the support for students to be successful. The first component of our equity and affordability priority is a Minnesota State Access Scholarship Program. And funds for this program would be allocated to each of our campuses to be awarded based on student needs within system-wide parameters. This program would provide flexibility so that Minnesota State Access Program could provide grants to part-time students as well as full-time students. We believe it would allow more students to make progress on their educational goals. You can see the criteria in front of you at the system level, and one of the areas related to that is it focuses on Minnesota residents. It's for new or transfer students at any one of our 30 colleges or 7 universities. And one of the areas where we heard very loudly from all our constituents is that it was very important that we make scholarship and grant funding available more so to our part-time students. So the enrollment requirement that we're proposing is at least 3 credits per term and not focusing just on full-time populations, and utilizing this funding more as a last dollar in approach after federal and state grants have been applied towards the student's cost of attendance. The next area we're focusing on, basic needs and support services. Emergency financial support for our students is critical. Financial emergencies often lead to early withdrawal during a semester and or a break in enrollment that may end up being permanent. In the COVID-19 environment, student finances are more precarious and susceptible to unexpected expenses that may derail their education. Guided by the work of Dr. Sarah Goldick-Robb at Temple University, Minnesota State strives to create a system where emergency grants can be a critical tool to retain students, having an application and distribution process that's simple, accessible, and quick, and that where there's a minimum of administrative burden. It's very important that this also have a campus-specific approach to it, since that is key to maximizing the effectiveness of this tool. Secondly, stigma-free and online mental health assessment tools. Over the past 5 years, several studies have shown mental health issues such as anxiety and depression to be among the top public health issues on our college campuses, with 28 to 56% of our students expressing negative impacts from mental health issues. Some Minnesota State campuses have begun to offer online assessments and modules addressing common concerns. Other efforts focus on mental health first aid, teaching a step-by-step approach to identify mental health disorders, intervene and connect individuals to right resources. These efforts and others, including online links to local mental health providers, need to be expanded. We have some great work happening at some of our individual colleges and universities, and quite simply with this request, we're looking at scaling that up across all 30 colleges and 7 universities. The third component is creating an easily accessible information hub to connect our students to local, county, and state resources that address basic needs. Student resource efforts need to be expanded to provide easily accessible referral information when campus resources are not available to address basic needs. An example of community connections which could be expanded upon include agencies such as 360 Communities, Community Action Partnerships, Goodwill, Salvation Army, United Ways, and many others. And lastly, providing support and professional development for all our faculty, staff, and administrators towards being intentional in addressing student needs and addressing structural inequities. This includes, but is not limited to, training that ensure that academic programs are designed with a student's first focus, specifically focusing on students from racial, ethnic, and indigenous populations, low income, and first generation students. The next part of this equity and affordability priority is a focus on career and technical education. We believe that we need to continue to grow short-term education and training certificates and industry-recognized credentials or degrees that provide greater access for unemployed or underemployed youth in the 18 to 24 category and adults 25 and over with just-in-time market-relevant skills. The second category is expanding on partnerships with local businesses. Skilled Workers of the Future is modeled after a successful legislative initiative. The local partnership program would provide additional high school to college pipelines for career and technical education with local businesses. In addition, successful guided learning pathway programs would be supported, such as Tiger Path, CTEC, and other new and existing programs that provide career guidance, hands-on instruction, and real-world experiences to encourage high school students to pursue technical education and seek careers in demand. The third area is excellence in career and technical teaching. Quality technical programs began with quality teaching in high school and college. This program would help address a shortage of secondary career and technical education teachers, shortages that have increased with teacher retirements due to COVID-19, as well as a lack of CTE teachers of color. The program will also partner with industry to validate and update curriculum and provide faculty with experiences to understand our advanced technology economy. The last item in the equity and affordability priority is expanding upon our work with open educational resources. This would be expanded by providing additional funds to expand free textbook offerings. This would include efforts to help faculty explore free offerings, expand current offerings, as well as implementing new offerings. This ultimately directly reduces student out-of-pocket costs, since textbooks are often not covered by some programs. Based on the evaluation of the work that's been done with open educational resources, we believe that a continuing to invest in our faculty and into this area will ultimately be very beneficial to our students. And you will hear a real specific example of some great work being done at Central Lake College related to their Z degree. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to President Hara Charlier from Central Lake Colleges, who will speak about student affordability.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, President Charlier from Central Lakes College. You may proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Christensen and committee members.
Excuse me one moment. Is the volume being affected? Are people having a hard time hearing her? Okay, so it's like, I don't know how you'd say it, kind of muffled echo type.
We will try again. Is this any better?
Not really.
No.
Let's try one more thing. How does that work?
Well, that's better, but it's really muted. It got rid of the muffledness. That's such a word.
Muffledness. Okay. Let me get close.
Okay.
Okay. How does this sound?
No problem. I want to know what members think. Give me a thumbs up if that's, you can talk for a moment, we'll see.
Well, you know, in this world of technical challenges, we've tested and tested, but still we're having challenges. Can you hear me okay?
Well, I've got a thumbs up and a thumbs down. I'm not sure.
Just speak loudly and we should be able to hear
her. Just speak as loudly as you can because it's clear, just not very loud.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Madam Vice Chair and committee members. No one has ever asked me to speak loudly before, ever. It is an absolute pleasure to be here today. We want to thank you for all of your support in this important work. And I also have to give recognition to Representative Heinzman, who is a Central Lakes College alumnus. So it's good to have members of the Central Lakes College family with us, and we so appreciate your support. You just heard Vice Chancellor Mackey talk about the importance of equity and affordability in all that we do. And I do hope that you can hear me because it's really important that we tell you that throughout every campus in Minnesota State, we feel this, we live this, and we are acutely aware of the challenges that our students face. And even though these challenges look different across the system, we absolutely know that students who are individuals of color, indigenous students, first generation college students, and low income students feel these challenges more acutely. We are committed to being partners to help to correct this. So let me give you a sense of what things look like at Central Lakes College with campuses in Staples and in Brainerd. If you were to talk to our students, you would find out that the vast majority have to work to support their families and themselves. About 48% are food insecure, 47% housing insecure. About half have no one in their family who has gone to college, and about 25% are below the federal poverty line. But what is remarkable is that these students continue to prioritize education. They find a way to squeeze it into their lives, and they are working incredibly hard. They truly do inspire us across this system and at Central Lakes College. And we're called to make certain that we are good partners so that they have access to basic needs and affordable college education. This is precisely the reason that Central Lakes College was an early adopter of an initiative that Vice Chancellor Mackey talked about, Open Educational Resources. And I just want to tell you a bit about that journey. So in 2015, our faculty and staff saw that students were having to make choices, choices between buying books and buying food, choices between required materials for their course and paying their electric bills. These are not choices we want any student to ever have to make. And it's not unique to CLC. In fact, in 2018, there was a study of 21,000 college students, and 64% said that they didn't buy the required text because it was too expensive. So not only is this an affordability issue, it's an untenable student success issue. We know that students absolutely have to have those materials when the class begins in order to be set up for success. And our faculty saw that. So armed with a grant, they embarked upon the journey of Open Educational Resources. And by 2017, Central Lakes was the first college to offer what is called now a Z degree, which means zero textbook costs. So a student can complete the Associate of Arts degree without ever buying or renting a textbook. And that is great. But what is even better is that we are part of a system that supports this work. And we have faculty that, as they develop Open Educational Resources or OERs, openly license them to be used by any faculty member to support students across the state. In this way, this movement has grown tremendously, and now an additional 6 colleges offer Z degrees. And more open educational resources are available. At Central Lakes alone today, about 50% of our faculty are teaching courses that have no textbook costs. 75% of our students are taking those courses, as you can imagine. And last year, that equated to 4,500 students. This is making a tremendous difference. And it's making a financial difference as a whole. In fact, last year we crossed the milestone of cumulative textbook savings of $1 million. And this spring we expect to reach $1.8 million. and it's making a difference in the lives of students. I cannot tell you how fervently supportive our student senates are for finding these ways to make these materials free and open. They are the staunchest supporters you will find. And students tell us that this makes a real difference in their lives. In fact, a student the other day said this: with many students such as myself, OER helps us find college much more affordable, and those OERs are more palatable than the very expensive, large, and intimidating texts. So I think OER is a central approach to making higher education more affordable. So I hope that you can see that a seemingly small initiative like this, the way it's structured, can make a profound difference in our commitment to college affordability and equitability. And we certainly appreciate your support. And we are very excited about going forward. So, Chair Bernardi, I truly hope that you heard those things. I truly hope that you've received this message of thanks. And that concludes my comments. And with your permission, I would love to turn the floor over to my colleague, President Adenuga Etewalagan of Riverland Community College.
Thank you very much. And welcome to the committee, President Etewalagan. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Christensen. I hope you can hear me well. Right. And the committee members of the Minnesota House Higher Education Finance and Policy Group, I thank you very much for this opportunity. And I'm going to give a shout out to Representative Brian Daniels, who has been at Riverland for a campus tour several times. And we just recently had a grand opening of Trade Transportation and Industrial Technology Education Center that you funded.
President, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was hoping to get a natural pause in there so that I could ask you to just state your name for the record. I don't believe that you mentioned that.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry
about that. Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead. And your affiliation.
All right. For the record, I'm Adenuga Etewalagan, president of Riverland Community College with campuses in Albert Lea, Austin, and Owatonna.
Thank you.
All right. And again, I want to acknowledge the opportunity to speak to you. And today I'm going to be focusing on the commitment to technical education and what we do across the state and what we do regionally. Of course, my comments, my remarks will probably focus more on what's happening at Riverland in the southeast region of the state. But it's just a microcosm of what happens across the state. So I hope you will take that as an example of some things that are happening all over. And you've heard us say this before, that Minnesota State, our colleges and universities, they make together the best economic development program we have in the state. This may be the 10th, 4th, 15th time you hear it. Why do you hear it so often? It's because it's the truth. And I'm going to mention a few reasons to support that. For instance, in our area, regionally, we focus on programs and industries that range from agriculture, food and biotechnology, to healthcare, manufacturing, and maybe in the northern part of the state, mining, engineering, IT, all over the state. We work with, in the southeast region, for instance, companies like Innovance in Albert Lea, Mrs. Jerry's in Albert Lea, Bushel Boy and Cable Equipment in Owatonna. Also in Owatonna, we have manufacturers like the glass company there, and also Federated Insurance, Varacon, the glass company in Owatonna. We supply some of their labor needs and their workforce needs, and they also support us in various ways. To meet their extra expenses, their labor shortages, and to make their opportunities for growth, the businesses in our region, they depend on our graduates. You've heard that over 300, 90 or 39,000 graduates awarded annually. But out of those 39,000 awards, Riverland contributes about 600 to those annually. We graduate students from programs like carpentry, truck driving, food industries, food programs like biotechnology, ag and farm business. We also graduate students in healthcare, nursing, and industrial maintenance and machine repair and maintenance. Criminal justice and law enforcement, radiology technology, nursing, and certified nursing program, to mention a few. Now, I will single out a couple of those programs to demonstrate how important those programs are to the vitality and the economic development of the region. For instance, 90% of the graduates that we produce in radiology technology work in the area. Yeah, it's a small program, but all those students work in the area with Mayo Clinic system or the Mayo Clinic in Rochester itself. For our criminal justice program, 55% of the police department or the sworn officers in the Austin Police Department are graduates of Riverland program. We have about 12 scholarships that the O'Mell Foods sponsor to their employees who are pursuing programs in industrial maintenance, machine repair, and maintenance. We have construction companies that rely on our carpenters, the students we graduate in carpentry. We also have some of the businesses in the area that need accountants and supervisory management, supervisory management programs that work in their businesses. Truck driving is another area where Riverland fulfills a lot of the needs of the logistic companies in our area for transportation. I don't have to mention the importance of programs like certified nursing assistant, perhaps even audio mobile and diesel technology. We have all these other programs, not only in Riverland, but in other corners of the state. I do want to also acknowledge other ways that the employees of the college, not only Riverland, but other colleges across the system, are able to participate in the local economy or to be members of the community. For instance, out of my 300 employees in Riverland, easily half of them are involved in some service clubs, maybe Kiwanis, Rotary, or they serve on members of the boards of some organization. I, for instance, I serve on Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation Board. I'm also honored to serve on the Board of Trustees of the O'Mell Foundation. I also serve with South Minnesota East Together. So there are all sorts of these areas that many of our presidents and staff members continue to work in the community. Of course, there's also a benefit in the sense that those companies, some of them also serve as advisory members on the program advisory groups for all those career and technical programs. So I would like to conclude that of all the 37 colleges and universities in the Minnesota state system, we have a commitment to technical education in a way that will continue to help our businesses and our partners in industry to meet the needs of their workforce. Not only now that they are all looking at how they recover from the economic constraints of COVID, but also to sustain and grow into the future. So, Madam Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and the members of this committee, I thank you for listening, and I hope in some little way you have seen how our colleges are part of that commitment to technical education and the workforce of our state. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to let members know I'm making a list, and we have two more presenters with the presentation for Minnesota State today. And then I will start with the members' questions. So if you have questions, please start raising your hands, and I am making a list. Thank you. We have President Wacker with us next from St. Go ahead. We have President Wacker with us from St. Cloud State University. Welcome to the committee.
Right. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, I am Robin Wacker, and I have the privilege of leading St. Cloud State University. And I want to say hello to the Husky alums that are also here today, Representative Krishaw and Representative Kosnick. Hello, and go Huskies. So I have the honor of talking a little bit about the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities' response to the COVID-19 situation. And in thinking about this presentation, it's just hard to believe that it's almost been a year since the pandemic emerged here in Minnesota, and that we received the charge from Chancellor Malhotra to make sure that we would safeguard the health, safety, and welfare of our faculty, staff, and students, and make sure that we enabled our students to make progress towards their educational goals. So all of us at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities went into high gear to make this charge a reality. So if you go back to spring 2020 semester, we all did the things like we needed to do, such as reformatting thousands of face-to-face classes. We conducted outreach campaigns to check in on our students, making sure they were doing okay. We all raised funds for food pantries and student emergency funds because we knew that our students were struggling. And at St. Cloud State, we raised close to $250,000 for our Husky Pantry and Student Emergency Fund. At St. Cloud State, we answered about 900 calls via our 24/7 COVID hotline, and like many other of our colleagues, held weekly town halls. We have the ability to provide telehealth and telecounseling services to our students, so we ramped up those services as well. And then fast forward to fall, universities like St. Cloud State with the residence halls, we prepped dorm rooms for safe living. And at St. Cloud State, we provided single room occupancy for double occupancy rates to help our students. We all sanitized hundreds of thousands of square feet of facility space to make sure we had safe learning and living environments. And my facilities VP reminds me that at St. Cloud State is about 2.5 million square feet of space that they take care of every single day. A lot of folks are working really hard to make sure we're safe for our students. We partnered with student government presidents on creative ways to reach out and connect with students. And certainly shout out to St. Cloud State President Yousafzai. He's really great behind the camera or with the camera and is a good partner on that with me. And I appreciate all of his work on that. I think at this point, we should all be awarded an honorary minor in epidemiology. We all learned the difference between PDR and antigen tests, about the efficacy of athletic pods, and how to make sure our teams were able to participate this year in a safe way. Learned about transmission rates, isolating and quarantining protocols, and certainly asymptomatic transmissions. But I have to say that we all have had the good fortune of working with an amazing group of leaders who really have served our university nonstop since March to support our students and also in partnership with our faculty, staff, and community. And in thinking about this too, you know, there have been some silver linings in all of this work. And although I won't miss being told on a regular basis, President, you're on mute, unmute yourself, using these new technologies has really helped us identify how we can simultaneously use both remote and face-to-face options to better serve our students and improve our operations. And certainly across the Minnesota State Universities and colleges, we absolutely have to let you know that our staff have been amazing and have come up with new and innovative ways to continue serving our students. And likewise, our faculty found creative ways to teach. And at St. Cloud State, we have faculty that found ways to continue their research and scholarship. And all of this, in spite of the fact that many of our faculty and staff had had child or elder care responsibilities and their own children who were also trying to learn online as well. So I'm proud to tell you that we have been agile, adaptable, and resilient. But here's what keeps me up at night. It's the human side of this story, which is the negative impact COVID has had, is having, and I believe will continue to have on our students. And so I'd like to end with a story about Annie, who's a first-year student at St. Cloud State University. I received an email from Annie's father in October asking about our policy for a refund of room and board and tuition. He told me his daughter wanted to withdraw. And I'm thinking, okay, she's made it past midterms, and perhaps there's something we could do to make sure she was connected with academic support, with our student support services, so she could finish her semester and it wouldn't be a total loss. So Annie's dad and I talked on a Sunday afternoon in October, and I asked him, you know, what can we do to support Annie so that she can finish this semester? And he said to me, President Wacker, I don't think there's anything you could have done differently or that you can do. She just doesn't have the energy to deal with yet another semester of trying to learn online. And he went on to tell me that Annie was an excellent student in high school, but this was her second experience of learning under COVID restriction, first as a high school senior and now as a freshman. And she just said, he said she just doesn't want to try any longer. And unfortunately, Annie dropped out. COVID-19 has been really tough on all of our students. We have so many students that were not able to experience the richness of what an on-campus experience provides. We know that 100% online learning is a poor fit for some of our students. We have a significant number of our students that didn't have access to a home environment that equipped them to navigate an online environment. And we know we had many students living in rural Minnesota that didn't have appropriate Wi-Fi to be able to access their courses. Our students didn't have access to internships, clinical and student teaching experiences. And also in addition to that, COVID-19 has taken a psychological toll on so many of our students. You know, so much about COVID we couldn't control and created so much uncertainty. Certainly many of our international students were caught in limbo. They didn't know should they risk going home or should they stay. Students fear a loss of another academic year. We know from faculty that many students just don't seem to have the motivation to continue and are certainly under a great deal of stress. So we're very aware that COVID has derailed the education journey for so many students. And Annie's story is but one of those stories, one of those students. We risk the risk of having a significant percentage of students who will not return to complete their degree is real, and a serious concern to the vitality of our workforce and our communities. So all of us in the Minn State system really understand and believe that our focus this next year and for the foreseeable future is for us to continue to engage and re-engage and support those students like Annie. You know, students like Annie are in our minds every single day, and we're working hard to ensure that all students can continue on their path to obtaining a degree and reaching their dreams. And we're honored to do that. So thank you all very much for your time. Appreciate giving you just a little snapshot of what's been happening on campus. And now, Chair Bernardi, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to Winona State University President Scott Olson. Thank you.
Thank you and welcome, President Olson. And members, this is, we'll be wrapping up our presentation today, and we have about six members on the list to get to questions. So welcome, President Olson.
Chair Bernardi, I'm Scott Olson, president of Winona State University, and mainly, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your support of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, for your support of NextGen, and for your service to Minnesota. Chair Bernardi, congratulations. Thank you for your leadership and for inviting me to talk about NextGen and for visiting us in Winona for the mini session. We're still talking about that. 2 years ago and 4 years ago, I had the honor of speaking to this committee about NextGen. Welcome back, Representative Albright. I remember your question very well from back then. And Representative Albright, you were exactly right. So we went with a commercial product called Workday that's been tested in the market, heavily used by private industry, and has proven itself to be everything we need to help our students learn and succeed and contribute to Minnesota's prosperity. Just as we need roads and bridges for our students to arrive on campus, technology is a necessary part of our infrastructure. And this past year proved that as we relied on IT more than ever. Vice Chancellor Mackey earlier talked about our budget proposal having a students first focus, and NextGen is all about serving students. This Workday product that we selected is going to make it possible for students to plan and manage everything at their fingertips. It makes our back office functions like finance and HR more efficient and effective. Students are going to be able to find and join programs, register for classes, check their grades, plan their graduation, and many other tasks all in one place, the cloud, using any device, a smartphone, a tablet, a computer, anytime, any place. So some of the tools that are going to be put into their hands are things like immediate, easy, just-in-time access to things like financial aid awards, finance charges, course planning, registration for courses, just with a couple of clicks. They'll be able to explore and make the best choices along the way, which eases their ability to transfer, reduces the time it takes to graduation, and therefore saves students money. This includes unified academic planning and academic records, degree audit activities within a single user experience. They can view, manage, and track multiple educational objectives all at the same time. And the technology allows for real-time alerts and reminders and notifications that keep students informed so they avoid the pitfalls of finding out too late about the negative consequences of something they were supposed to do or weren't supposed to do. So, thank you so much for investing in our students by investing in NextGen. Chair Bernardi, this concludes the Minnesota State presentation. Do you or any committee members, you already said, you have six questions teed up, and I'm sure there might be more. So I will turn it back to you, Chair Bernardi, to manage the questions about the entire Minnesota State presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you to all our presenters today. I appreciate your remarks, and we are going to start with our questions. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I should have worn my Winona sweater. Forgot about that. This question has to do with the zero text presentation. If they're not using textbooks, does that mean that the instructor has to put together a whole curriculum all by themselves? Or what is the procedure? How do they go about having a zero text program?
Chair Bernardi, Representative Mason.
Chancellor Malhotra.
Yes, Chair Bernardi, Representative Mason, I will defer to President Charlier from Central Lakes College, President of Central Lakes College.
President Charlier, I think, is that right? You might need to correct me.
Nope, it is perfect. Thank you, Chair Bernardi.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for the question, Representative Mason. The process is, you're right, that to put together these very high quality materials does take significant effort on the part of the faculty members. So there is a professional development process that Minnesota State has coordinated. And faculty who want to engage in that work with mentors and receive guidance and a small stipend to get that work done so that we're ensuring that whatever they're producing for that course is the highest quality possible. And then, as I briefly mentioned, they license that for use across the state. So the cost that is in this type of initiative is supporting the development of the materials, and then they are used far and wide beyond that. But you're absolutely right. There is significant work that goes into it. We have extremely talented faculty, and they're extremely high quality materials.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, Representative O'Neill.
you, Madam Chair. So I'm a proud graduate from Bemidji State University, applied psychology with a minor in chemical dependency, went on to get my master's at Regent University. And so I really appreciate this Mid State system. And on a side note, if Roger Moe would send me an email, I have some other issue I'd like to talk to him about, if you'd be so kind. And now, Chairman Bernardi, I have three questions. Would you like me to ask them all at once, or do you want me to ask them one at a time? They're not terribly challenging.
I would say one at a time, and then I'll come back to you when they're answered.
Thank you very kindly, Chair Bernardi. I'm wondering if the system could tell us just a little bit more about their mentorship program, whether they're doing student advisory, or how are they taking people from square zero, basically when they enter the system, and helping them transition into career. Maybe different colleges or universities within the system do it slightly differently, but it seems to me that the more we hear from students, the more I hear kind of the same thing that we were hearing for the last decade or so, of there's a little bit of a disconnect still within the system of they want a degree, but they're not quite sure what they're going to do with it when they're done. And so I'm just wondering, what are you doing systematically to kind of guide people into a career as opposed to a degree?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill, great question. And I would ultimately defer to my presidential colleagues. They can provide you with more detail. But we recognize that we have to take a holistic approach in supporting our students, both inside and the classroom, inside and outside the classroom, both before they enter our college or university, and then continue to position them well in the workforce and meet their needs as they progress through their careers. And recently we launched a system-wide initiative called Guided Learning Pathways. And that again is a framework which each college and university will adapt to its own student demographics and into its own local needs. And so with that, I will maybe have a President Atabalogun talk about how it occurs in two-year sector, and then President Wacker or President Olson can talk about the university experience.
Okay, if you could briefly, briefly, because we have a lot of members and Representative O'Neill has two more questions, so if you could briefly answer that would be wonderful. President Atawalga.
Thank you very much, Chair Bernardi, Madam Chair. We do a lot of mentoring and apprenticeship by collaborating with the local industries. I mentioned in my presentation that we had program advisory groups. So every career and technical program has an advisory group that constitute part of some of the people that teach on campus and also representatives from industry. So we work together. Now, it's not as perfect as we would like to because there are some obstacles. Then also over the summer, some of our students get to work at some of those institutions, and some employers sponsor scholarships for students who are currently working maybe in the evening or the second shift, but they would be in school during the day or vice versa. So we do recognize there are opportunities for improvement, but there are ways we have in place to make sure that some of those students in career and technical programs do get mentorship and internships.
Thank you. President Wacker?
Yes, thank you. So much like Scott, I imagine what we do is instead of waiting for the student to like go, it's my senior year, I better figure this out, we have what's called Huskies First Four, and the first 4 weeks and first 4 months, we introduce them to our Career Services Center. We begin to build that relationship and get them connected to how to build resumes, doing interviews, getting connected to career opportunities, and getting them prepared for when they do leave. And those activities are also built into our what we call our four-year map for each of our degree programs. So it's just part and parcel of what we want them to do every single year. Because you're right, if we wait too long until they're juniors or seniors, we've missed the boat.
Thank you. And Representative Neal, why don't you ask both questions, and then Representative Noor, you are on deck. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I would just encourage the Chancellor and all of the presidents that are listening here and virtually to make sure that you think about, once that student makes a choice to be at your university or college, that you're thinking about how do you get them into their career as opposed to how do you get them a degree. So I just really want to encourage that, because we don't want any wasted time or money getting these folks into the right career path. The second question is very simple, and that is, you asked for $120 million above your base, and I'm wondering, did you take into account the IFO, so that your faculty self-imposed pay freeze, so they're not asking for any additional pay raises, was that already accounted for? So that's my second question. And my third and final question is specifically about the drop in student enrollment. And you've got a range from, you've had about a 1% increase, and I think that was at Winona, I believe, all the way to about a 10% drop in enrollment at St. Cloud State. And those numbers came from the faculty, from IFO. So if those are inaccurate, I apologize, but that's the most up-to-date information that I have. And I'm wondering, they told me just anecdotally what happened differently between the Winona State that actually had an increase in enrollment versus St. Cloud State that had 10% reduction. And so mostly I just want to bring that kind of to the public sphere to talk about, to make sure that we are capturing as many students as we possibly can, and making sure that we have that personal relationship like Winona State did. So the second question is the most important, though. Have you taken into account the IFO pay freeze when you did your budget, the additional request over base of $120 million?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill, great questions. I'll defer to Vice Chancellor Mackey. He should be able to answer both the questions. In the interest of time, I'll just keep my comments to myself on those questions for the time being.
Okay, Vice Chancellor, thank you. And thank you, Chancellor, and Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill. Related to the information from the IFO and their across the board pay freeze for fiscal year 22, we were aware of that as we were developing the biennial budget request. The biennial budget request and what supports our compensation is, especially for our universities, the majority portion of it is supported by tuition, and some portion of it is provided by state support. So we did have that. We were aware of that, and it was part of our consideration as we were developing a budget request. And related to student enrollment, we do have variety across the system, and we have seen an enrollment decline for this particular year. Some of it is due to enrollment decline that was expected due to demographics, and then some of that has been exacerbated by the pandemic. And I know we're in a time crunch, but Presidents Olson and Wacker would have more detailed explanations of the stories at their individual universities than I would have. So thank you.
Chair Bernardi, would you like me to address
that? Yeah, briefly, and we're going to go to Representative Noor.
Yes. Yeah, so at St. Cloud State, we behind the University of Minnesota, we serve the largest percent of international students. So a significant part of our decline this year was the drop in international student enrollment. It was very significant at St. Cloud State because students weren't able to come, international students. We also are among the highest in serving first generation and Pell eligible students. So that the story in talking about the stress of students and what COVID has done to many of our students that lost, that worked in the economic sectors that have been the hardest hit in with COVID, with restaurant, hospitality, and so on. So many of our students are really been impacted negatively with COVID. So as I mentioned, we are reaching out and connecting with the students to make sure we can reengage them and get them back in the summer and in the fall.
Thank you. Representative Noor.
Thank you,
Chair Bernardi, and I just wanted to shout out also for my university, the Metropolitan State. I think Chancellor Malhotra, next time we need pictures of the members who are in this committee as part of our students so that we can justify the work we do, and we appreciate the work that you do every single day. Some of my questions have been asked, and my other question that I have for you, Chancellor, is you talked about 2030 as a way of closing the gaps that we have. What is pushing you for 10 years versus a few years that we can tackle some of the persistent gaps that we have in our society?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Noor, first of all, a great suggestion. We'll keep that in mind. And I think a great question. As you well know, all through the nation, these educational disparity gaps, as is the case with some of the other disparities, these gaps, educational equity gaps, both in access and student success, have been very, very persistent and haven't altered in the last 2 to 3 decades. And so I think where we are coming from and how Equity 2030 is different is a change in mindset, where we are asking fundamentally the question, not necessarily, is the student ready for our college or university? We are flipping that question and asking, are our colleges and universities ready for the students who are coming to us, because we see potential in every student? And the other mindset we are taking is that rather than helping students overcome their barriers, we are asking ourselves the question, what kind of support structures we can put in place where we can eliminate the barriers themselves? So there is a lot of foundational work which needs to be done, and there is a lot of complementarities among our colleges and universities and the broader society which have to be leveraged in order to overcome this initial resistance and start attacking these educational equity gaps and start closing them. We fully recognize that we ourselves will not be able to close the gap in of itself, because if we could, we would have closed the gaps already. Given the kind of barriers which our students face, both in access and in persisting through their educational journey, like economic vulnerability, like childcare needs, like food insecurity, housing insecurity, other deficits and basic needs. And so we need to also build strong partnerships and make other strategic investments. And all this gearing up will take some time. And our hope is that we will start on this journey in a manner that we can sustain it and ultimately close the educational equity gaps.
Thank you, Representative Noor. Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chancellor Malhotra, for your response.
Thank you. Next on the docket is Representative Albright, and we have Representative Heintzman in on deck. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. The first I'll direct to the Senator, Roger Moe. Senator Moe, good to see you. You were the chief author of the enacting language that put this Minsky system together. And that's been a number of years ago. Arguably, I think COVID and other interactions with workforce development and communities and whatnot have certainly exposed some weaknesses, but also some strengths of the system. So if you had to write new language as you saw it today, what would you incorporate in it to provide for even more of a vigorous Minsky system today that you did not anticipate when you put the language on the in the hopper those years ago? And I do have one follow-up, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Moe.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Albright, thank you for that question. No question about it. I suspect if we could do things today, or you look back and change things, we probably would have made some changes. I think one of the difficulties initially was to take three separate cultures of higher education and put them together. And so changing cultures doesn't happen overnight. It takes a generation. And we are finally, and I think all of the campus presidents would, you will hear them echo this, they now view this as a system. And so I would say that, initially when we created the board, we allowed representatives from each of the three boards to be on the board of trustees. I think that was a particular issue back then, and probably we shouldn't have done that, but some things we had to do to get things passed, as you know. But I think all in all, the goals that we had at the time, which were to take higher education rather than this kind of hierarchy that we used to have, a kind of a vertical system, to put it on a horizontal system so students would have access to liberal arts as well as vocational technical training, to allow for greater ease of transfer and transferability. It's not perfect yet, but it certainly has substantially improved. Consolidation of campus by leadership, that has been accomplished in many cases. And so the cost curve is an issue besides all of this. I was hoping that we would see some bending of the cost curve. That's not the case. And mainly because, I was there, higher education was not as high a priority as healthcare costs and other kinds of costs that were pressing the legislature at the time. And that you faced the same thing. So I think we are now a mature system, and see ourselves as a system. A student at Rainy River and International Falls has access to the other 36 campuses. And I think that's a strength of the system, and it will continue to be so. As a matter of fact, the more we hear from folks around the country about looking at higher education, I think our system is strategically positioned to deal with what we have to deal with today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Just to follow up, and this question would be posed at the Chancellor. Chancellor, we've had ongoing conversations over the years with regard to concerns that I have expressed with regard to we understand that there is a necessary amount of homogeneity across the structures of your universities and campuses. But as President Olson and I shared a year ago, there is a degree of desire and import for each university and college campus to become a center of excellence, particularly with regard to the workforce that they serve, but also in terms of the teaching and the tenure of academia that is present at each one, and that it spurs itself to even and greater excellence. I'm concerned that that isn't happening, as I've seen in other states, and I'm hoping, this is more of a statement as opposed to a question, and you're happy to respond, but I'm hoping that we're not looking at just for the next 2 years in terms of academia. As you and I have expressed, there are industries across this globe that the state of Minnesota should own. And whether they are housed at Metro State, St. Cloud State, or I tried to look for my sweatshirt from Moorhead State, but obviously I don't know why, but it shrunk in the drawer. Can't fit it anymore. Might have to work on that. Could you just speak to the recognition, or the lack thereof, of where are the jobs and the careers going to happen 20 years from now, and how are you moving to address that?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Albright, I agree with you entirely that we not only have to focus on future of work, but we also have to focus on work of the future. And germane in your comments is the notion that we need to figure out that how is the cognitive base of knowledge which is needed for the occupations which are emerging and where the economy is going, and given those needs, how it circles back and then impacts on our programmatic structures, on our curricular designs, on our deliveries, on the partnerships we make with businesses. So we have to rethink higher education. And you're absolutely right. In that context, each campus will have to look at their local needs, their local strengths, and then find those niche areas and work on it, because that way we can all work in unison to meet completely all the needs of the state of Minnesota. So your point is very well taken, and our presidents are very aware of it, and we are working closely with our internal stakeholders to moving towards that vision which you have of how we can meet the workforce needs of tomorrow.
Thank you. And members, we just got permission to go 10 minutes over. We have 4 members that are on the list to ask questions. I'm going to ask that each member ask for one question, and I believe we'll be able to get through the rest of our list. Representative Erickson.
I just was on deck, Madam Chair.
Okay, let me see here. Okay, sorry. Just a second. Okay, she was on the list before, and I see that she's off now. So thank you, Representative Heinzman. Representative Heinzman.
It was self-serving to say anything, so I suppose I deserve some criticism for that. But I will start with a couple of comments. Some things that I'm really pleased to hear from our college presidents. I'll start with President Wacker. Thank you for addressing kind of an elephant in the room. It was not the fault of Minnesota State that we wound up with the restrictions that we found ourselves under. And students did see some really difficult times. I have 2 currently in my Central Lakes College campus. Thank you, President Charlier, for providing as best we could for the students there, and to the presidents across the entire system. It's been a heck of a challenge, and it's one that we didn't see happening in neighboring campuses and just across the borders of the state of Minnesota. So hopefully we can address those things as students may have difficulties down the road. The other shout out, and President Charlier, I already mentioned you, but I'll mention I appreciate the discussion about open source textbooks. When I came to the legislature in 2015, I actually carried legislation on that, and I'm proud to see portions of that being utilized and students benefiting from it. I hope that we continue to expand that opportunity, helps lower costs drastically for students across the entire system. And seeing the open source being available to edits and changes without the massive costs that you saw in books as I was in the mid-state system, it's really a blessing. I'm impressed to see it working. My questions would be for Chancellor Malhotra or any others that would like to respond. Obviously, we have some things that we want, $120 million above the current base, and we'd love to do that. We have a deficit, and we'll see in this February forecast where we wind up. The governor has requested $63.5 million above the base. And I think we all are hopeful as we start looking towards what the actual financial situation is in the budget. So I'll just get right to the question. If we're all disappointed, I'm hoping that we have some ideas in the hopper, ready to find reductions in costs that are as the least negative impacts to students, obviously, would be favorable. And I'm just hoping that that's also being carefully considered system-wide, Chancellor, while still addressing so many of the challenges that were brought up in the presentation. You know, not everything can be done. I'm aware of that, but I just want assurance and I'm hopeful to hear that conversation is happening. I mean, maybe it's not appropriate now while we're asking for increases, but I just want to confirm that.
Councilor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Heinzelman, great question, and I want to assure you that we want to pursue and practice fiscal prudence, at the same time expand the opportunity set for our students. So as we develop our budgets, as we develop our financial and sustainability strategies for our colleges and universities, both our presidents as well as leadership at the system office is very, very focused on eliciting as much economic efficiencies we can out of the budget. With that, I'll pass it on with your indulgence, Chair Bernardi, to Vice Chancellor Mackey. He may quickly provide some additional details of current efforts.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Mackey, and then we, thank you. We'll be going to Representative Keeler. She's on deck. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative Heinzelman, and I'll be brief and can provide further information. Many of our colleges and universities are in process of doing budget restructures right now. In the event the funding is received, they'll still be doing budgeting restructures and reductions. It would just be a matter of if they have to do further reductions, and I would be happy to share some more specific information related to that, but including some of the presidents on this part of this presentation, they've been working with their campus communities, adjusting to some of the challenges that they've had on their campuses for financially for quite some time. So it's definitely at the top of mind for Minnesota State and for all 30 of our presidents. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Keeler, we're going to go to you. And I just want to give a thanks and a shout out to Public Information for allowing us to go over a little bit today. We appreciate their support. Representative Keeler and Representative Sandell, you are on deck. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chancellors, and everybody else who's here. I want to take things down a different lens. I think that one of the things that we need to do is look at who the future of our students are. I like that you shared the data that there's 70,000 students that are age 25 or plus. I would like to see that data broke down a little bit more. Where are we in our 30s? Where are we in our 40s? I think that we know we've seen cracks in our education system for a lot. We used to always assume that everybody who graduates is going to go right into higher ed, and that's not the case. We know that. I know that. I'm a double grad from MSUM, and I didn't do that until my 30s. And so I think that we really need to be smart when we look at the future of what education looks like in the state of Minnesota. We need to make sure that we have resources that are helping families go back to school. There's a lot of people who entered into a career. Representative O'Neill said it well. You know, we work really hard at getting people degrees, but not really into careers. And so as we start to work, we wonder, well, maybe I need to go down a different path. So from a recruitment lens, I would really like to see active recruitment to the working population, in our 30s and going back and getting degrees that are more sufficient to help people level up. We know that we see huge gaps in our graduation, both in K-12 and higher ed for our underserved populations. So just reaching out to those populations specifically. So I guess my question here is, who can talk to what do those recruitment strategies look like when we're looking at the older than average population and help them really level up in their careers?
Chair Bernardi, Representative Keeler, in the interest of time, let me pass it on to one of the presidents, President Edvalugan and or President Charlier. They can talk about how we work with non-traditional students or post-traditional students or older students.
Thank you. President Edvalugan.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I'll just give an example of what we are doing currently to address what Representative Keeler mentioned. We started what we call an online-only program for business and accounting professionals. We call it FlexPace. It's being sponsored mainly by the Federated Insurance in Owatonna. And what happens is this is a modularized instruction. the students have to be either full-time employers or they are definitely in the adult range. They're trying to change career. They will take those courses with us, modules, and they are sponsored by employers in some cases to get their associate degree in business or accounting, and then they transfer to MSU Mankato and get their four-year degree. So we have example programs like that that are targeted to adults so that they can change careers if necessary. I'll just leave that one alone. And then finally, back to mentorship, we do have engaged advising for individual students so that they have access to an advisor to help them if they enroll in any of our 37 institutions.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and chancellors and presidents. In the materials that you sent out to us, you showed us that there are about 303,000 students who participate at Minnesota State, but 100,000 of those are in non-degree programs. What are those students doing, and what's their experience like on your campuses? Is your faculty doing the teaching? Are they paying? Are the students paying tuition? And how are they contributing to the campuses?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Sandell, I will defer to Vice Chancellor Mackey to answer that question in the interest of time.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
I'm sorry, I missed part of the question, the 303,000 students.
So the question was, Bill, that there are 100,000 students who are in our non-credit bearing work, and how do we what kind of instruction we provide them, and how do we fund it?
Oh, thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative Sandell. The 100,000 non-credit students are funded similarly to an auxiliary enterprise. So our colleges and universities have training units that are basically self-sustaining, where the revenue that they earn in working with business and industry covers the cost of instruction and the cost of overhead of providing that training. And there's we've been working across the state where we have some regional partnerships that are occurring in that area. So it's part of our overall academic enterprise, but it's also, in a sense, has a standalone entity feel to it at times.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick follow-up. Is the majority...
Representative Sandell.
Thank you. Are those programs concentrated at one or a small number of schools, or are they distributed pretty much throughout the system?
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Sandell. They are distributed across the system. They're split with the regional configuration. There are some colleges that are more active in this area and have a broader reach than others. And then there's some that specialize in certain sectors. So the amount of activity at each one of our colleges and universities is fairly uneven, but the goal of Minnesota State and addressing workforce solutions is to ensure that there's access to all of our colleges and universities programs so that one college can help broker getting a program and service in their area, even if they don't provide it, by partnering with another college and university that has that program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mackey, and thank you, Chair Bernardi, for the extra time.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Well, thank you, members, and I want to thank the Chancellor for being here today, all the trustees, our testifiers, and I also want to thank at Metro State all of our students and staff. They are very important to our state, and we really appreciate all they're doing, especially during this difficult time. And they're the ones that are future of Minnesota and growing our economy, and we're so happy that Minnesota State creates this door of opportunity for education for our Minnesotans. So with that, I want to let members know that next week we are, and the public listening, we are going to be having the Minnesota private colleges here, as well as going through the state grant program formula. And we will also be having the tribal colleges here next week. With that, I want to thank everyone here today, and the meeting is adjourned.